all that.
Blog Talk Radio.
Someday, we're going to get this intro to work again. I don't know why. I don't, you know, I'm trying random ones. This was supposed to have been fixed a month ago. Damn it, Randy. Ah, well, what can you do? Welcome to the show, everybody. A fun 90-minute show. We think it's going to be 90. We'll figure it out as we go. Seth Kamen, Sean Palmer, welcome back to the World Series.
Yeah, Meet the Mets isn't working either. This is very disappointing to me. And I could sing it again, but I think you all have enough of me.
No,
but
let's hear you sing it. Let's hear you sing it one more time.
Hold on. Let me get all the words because I know most of them, but I got to get all of them. Hold on. Here we go. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Meet the Mets. Meet the Mets. Step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kitties, bring your wife. Guaranteed to have the time of your life because of Mets.
Yeah, that's enough of that. I figured 15 seconds would suffice. Let's see if he's still singing.
Side, west side, everybody's coming down to meet the...
Yeah, does anyone really want to hear Sean sing? Really? All right, we'll play the rest of it.
All the fans are true to the orange and blue, so hurry up and come on down. Because you got ourselves a ball club. I'm missing it in there. But anyway, I missed the first part. Oh, the butcher and the baker and the people on the streets. Here they go.
Okay, you're getting muted again. Okay, I think we're only allowed to do these things three times in a show. So, well done, sir.
Well, you know, tomorrow is a very exciting day. Because 16 years ago, when the Mets were in the World Series the last time, they played the Yankees. And the Mets fans, look, we're the redheaded stepchild of this town. Much the same way as the Jets fans are. And the Islanders fans are. You see a little quinky dink in there? I'm a fan of all three. So when we faced the Yankees, number one, we weren't the favorite. Number two, nobody gave us a shot. And number three, I don't even think the Mets fans gave the Mets a shot. And I was one of them. I really didn't think they were going to win. Didn't think they had a shot. The Yankees were a very, very good ball club. This is a World Series the Mets could win. And you asked me a couple of days ago, you said, will you cry if the Mets win the World Series? You know, I've taken a couple of days to think about this, which is surprising for me that I've taken that long. The last time I cried at a sporting event, the last time I cried when my team won, I think that's better because I've had a lot of crying when they've lost. I cried when the Orange won the national championship in 2003, so 13 years ago. Do you remember the last time you cried at a sporting event, if you have at all?
I have. I'm trying to remember when it was. It may have been in 2001 when Maryland went to the Final Four for the first time. I don't think I cried when they won the national title. Because the game was so bad that you just couldn't. But I think I teared up a little bit at that point. There may have been one or two Olympics where this happened, because I do kind of get caught up. Oh, when Landon Donovan scored the goal to put in overtime them into the second round in 2008, I think was the last time that I cried, that I teared up. Because I think the whole bar pretty much teared up.
It tells you a little bit of something about the expectations of USA Soccer if you're cheering to get to the second round.
And to beat, who was it? Algeria. It was not great. Their expectation, they also had four goals taken, or two or three goals taken away from them during the season, during the three-game first round. So anyway, but we continue, please.
So, yeah, I'll cry. I thought about this. I will probably break down. I will probably cry. It's been a rough year. I'm glad 2015 is going to end on a happy note in 3 weeks when I go on this Australia trip with my grandmother. It's been one of those years, so I you know what? I'll probably cry. I mean, I'm thinking about it now, and I'm debating to go into a game. It's really, really expensive. The average cost of a ticket at Citi Field for Game 3 right now is over $1,000 average. And the last time that happened, I think the only time that happened on the secondary market, according to Darren Rovell of ESPN, was Game 6 between the Cardinals and the Red Sox a couple of years back. $1,000 a seat is a lot of money.
And that was also for a different situation. That was when the Red Sox won the title for the first time, or
no,
is this for the third one?
This is the third one.
Is it two or three?
I mean,
they beat Colorado. I thought they swept the Cardinals, then they beat Colorado, and then they beat the Cardinals again.
Right. So this is the second time they beat the Cardinals. It's
okay.
The first time they swept. And this was a game six that it was that the ticket was that expensive. So, remember, when they swept, they ended it not in Boston.
Yes, they ended
right?
it in St. Louis.
Right. So the 2013, I'm looking it up right now, only one game since the 2012 World Series had an average sold price of more than $1,000 on StubHub. And remember, StubHub hasn't been around forever, so you don't have that. It's Game 6 of the 2013 series, which I think was the first time the only time that they've won at Fenway. So that's why the price was so high, Game 6 against the Cardinals in Fenway. And look, you haven't won in a gazillion years at home. I totally get it. I could not imagine that the Mets had a clinching game five, how much those seats would be. I can't even imagine the cost.
Do you want to do a position by position breakdown, or talk about it as a whole?
I don't think position by position really matters. It's not like basketball. It's not like, I would say, football in some ways. Position by position, there's no guarding against. So I
sure.
think that I think you know offense, defense, maybe hitting and pitching might go there. But I think the concept is that a lot of people are asking me why they think the tickets are much more expensive this year than they were for the 2006 series, and that was 2000 series, and that was the Yankees versus the Mets. Well, A, the secondary market is much bigger than it's ever been, and number two, Shea Stadium held 12,000 more people. That's 12,000 more tickets. Anyway, if you'd like to call in, 760-283-0846. We're going to go about 20 more minutes, maybe 15 minutes on the World Series, and then we'll move over to our NBA preview, the long-awaited preview, which I always get wrong. Well, that's just about every preview I get wrong. But anyway, so let me ask you, do you think the Mets – well, let's get your prediction out right now. Who wins the series? And the silence. Seth, are you still there? Did you go on mute? I'm still on the phone, but I don't hear Seth. So I'm gonna keep talking. Seth, are you still there? Calling Seth.
Okay, I am here. That was not really suspense. That was not really suspense. Somehow I didn't mute. I muted myself on the phone. Do you know how many people have wanted to mute me over the years? You know how many people would have enjoyed that? My wife would have been thrilled for the opportunity to mute me. I like the Mets. I do. Yes, Kansas City is coming. Has obviously more experience, and am I a little bit concerned that you don't have that other than the fat man, there is not one pitcher of consequence that's really over 25 for a small suit. I don't know what that was. Now, but it was something actually. I was driving in the car in the car a couple of days ago, and you know the Mets seem to have an advantage in a short series. You know, you look at they beat the Dodgers. The Dodgers have the two best pitchers in baseball this year, in Kershaw, in Greinke, because games 3 and 4, the pitchers couldn't catch up. Chicago, Lester, Arrieta, and then in which they won, and then 3 and 4 they just blew them out. I look at the Kansas City starting staff. Cueto has not been anything special, to say the least, since being traded over. Ventura is a nice, I look at the pitchers, and you know they were 12th in the league in ERA. You have Edison Volquez starting game 1. You have Ventura starting 3. You have Chris Young of all people starting game 4. You know. I look at this. I look at their pitching, and you know they're so young. You know Harvey's probably 26, but Syndergaard, his first year, is pitching game 3. DeGrom is who's a rookie of the year last year, is pitching game 2. Steven Matz, who is started in July, I think, is pitching starting game 4, and they have. And I look at that staff, and there's just no soft point.
Oh, no, there is. There's a soft point. His name is Big Sexy, and he's got a lot of soft right in the stomach area. A lot of soft.
You're talking the fat man.
I'm talking Big Sexy, baby, Bartolo Colon. You
that's
call
the
him
man.
A fat man? No, that's Rich Garces, okay? Bartolo Colon, that was El Guapo. Big Sexy is Bartolo Colon. And I'll tell you, there's no man that deserves a World Series championship more than Bartolo Colon. That man has reinvented himself at least 4 times.
Now, I mean, I look through the lineup, and this is neither lineup particularly scares me. I do not believe Daniel Murphy can really continue this because, to be honest, does anyone really believe Daniel Murphy can continue this? His OPS.
Wait a second.
Okay.
That's fair. I think, can anybody continue this? It's not just Daniel Murphy. No,
well, that's
player
what I said.
Done this. Yeah.
I said, can anybody? That was exactly what I just said. Do you actually listen to me? I said, nobody
I
can
do.
Continue this, this. You're the only one. Nobody could continue, this hotness. But Lucas Duda kind of looks like may have jumped out of the slump, David Wright, who I think everybody is extremely happy for, a guy who could have gone and played elsewhere, Mr. Met, whatever words you want to use, and missed most of the season because of the spiral stenosis, is still hitting the ball pretty well, though he's not hitting as hard as he doesn't have the power that he did. But, Kansas City is one of those teams that you're not quite sure how they do it, but they just do it. They're not overwhelmingly talented. I don't look at them and say that it is an overwhelming. Do you see anyone who you'd say, okay, that's the best player at his position in the American League? Maybe
no.
Perez?
No, team's offense is incredibly potent is a good word, yeah. I mean, look, this is the new age. Craig Calcaterra wrote this on Hardball Talk today. He said, people 20 years from now may look back on this World Series and say they finally reverted back to the pre-steroid era with baseball. Because there are no, Cespedes hit, I think, 33 home runs. But there are no huge power hitters in the Atlantis.
This is back to this is back minus the speed, but this is 1982. This is 1985. This is 1987 when you had Kansas City versus the Cardinals.
That was 85.
Right, the Twins versus the Cardinals. The Twins are a good comp because you had Kirby Puckett, but nobody else. Is, you had Brunansky and you had Gene Larkin. I mean, you didn't really have a whole lot of people that you ever expected the ball to go out of the park. And I think that's very comparable to these two teams, extremely comparable with these two teams.
So if we're saying that in a lot of ways the hitting is a bit of a wash, and Kansas City is a very good fielding team, probably a team is a better fielding team, I think, than the Mets. And their bullpen is very good, but with what's his name out for the year? Is it Holland? Yeah, Greg Holland, who tore his UCL in September. They still have Wade Davis. They have Ryan Madsen. They have Danny Duffy is now in the bullpen. It's solid and it's still better. I would still probably take it over the Mets bullpen, although the Mets closer Jeurys Familia has been unbelievable this year. But Tyler Clippard, it feels like, has pitched every single game and he's allowed a run in every single game. I would probably go with Kansas City's bullpen, but I just kind of it just kind of has that feel to me. It just has that feel for you, Sean. Maybe it's your year. So I think the series should be fun. I think it'll be close. I think it'll be low scoring, and I will take the Mets. And I'll take the Mets in seven.
In seven, so you got them. So you have them going back to Kauffman up 3-2. And then losing game six and then winning game seven. And the interesting thing about game seven is your life, it's game three starters. So you'll have Ventura versus Syndergaard.
Syndergaard.
In game,
yeah.
Which would be an incredible matchup in game seven if that actually happens. I have said this numerous times before that I don't believe the Mets are going to win their series. And I'm going to go with that again because I didn't pick them to beat the Cubs. I didn't pick them to beat the. I'm sorry. I didn't pick them to beat the Dodgers. I didn't pick them to beat the Cubs. If I don't pick them to beat the Royals, will they win? And then I'm all good. I'm going that
probably
route.
Not.
Well,
but what do you actually
think? Look, there is nothing that beats good starting pitching in the playoffs. We've seen that every year. I mean, Madison Baumgartner last year. I mean, you can rattle off the great starting pitching performances of the last 20 years. And when you have pitching that dominates, there's no hitting that can come and get you. And the thing that the Mets have shown in the last two series is that young pitching, power pitching, is the equalizer of everything. And they have pitched themselves into the World Series, and it's definitely something I didn't expect at the beginning of the year. Look, Seth, you and I've been beating this drum all year that I wanted meaningful games in August. Then I wanted meaningful games in September, and then I wanted meaningful games in October. Well, it looks like I'm going to get a meaningful game in November, too. It makes me very happy. The head of me says that the Mets will win in six games. The heart, I don't want to pick them because I don't want to be disappointed. I think that's where I go. I'm getting a little nostalgic right now, so it's really hard to talk about this series without getting chills, without the heart beating a little bit faster than it normally does. This is exciting stuff. Look, you've experienced this as a Giants fan a couple of times in the last 10 years. You've experienced this as a Yankees fan over and over and over again. It seems like 20 times in the last 30 years. It hasn't been that many, but you get my point. For the Long Island fan that hasn't seen anything like this since 1986, a legitimate shot at winning a World Series or a Championship Series. And I say that for Long Island fans, because most Long Islanders are Jets, Mets, and Islander fans, and Knicks, but the Knicks really don't count. We'll get to that in the second hour. This is as exciting as you can get, and I have to say I'm very thankful to those Yankee fans that are happy for Mets fans. I didn't anticipate this reaction.
This is actually something I wanted to bring up because there's been a lot of debate back and forth. Now, I am a Yankees fan, but as you know, I have been rooting going full because I don't consider this a rivalry. Not in a negative capacity. They're not rivals. They're in different leagues, and they're a New York team. So I see no reason not to root for them. I have friends such as yourself, such as Yoav and Beth Levy, and you know people who've been Mets fans for many, 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 many years. And you know, but I've seen a lot of resentment on Facebook and reading articles of Mets fans resenting that Yankee fans are pulling for them. And I find that a little hard to. I was wondering what your reaction was to that.
Well, my reaction is I have a bunch of friends that are Yankee fans, and they've all been very complimentary of the team, and I'm very happy to hear that. It's a lot easier for a Yankee fan to root for the Mets than it is for a Mets fan to root for the Yankees. It's my feeling. Maybe it's because it's me personally, but when you have the championships, it's easier to say to somebody else, you can have one too, rather than if you don't have a championship saying, oh, yeah, go get your 10th. It's okay. Like, I would have a very hard time rooting for the Yankees, and I never have. I've never rooted for the Yankees. Well, aside from a date or two that I went on with the Yankees fan. But aside from that, I've never rooted for the Yankees. In fact, I've rooted there's a book that is called Diary of a Yankee Hater, which I took out when I was, I think, 12. It was written by a Mets fan. Not a Red Sox fan, a Mets fan. And I think it's been a whole lot easier to root for the Yankees if you are a Mets fan since interleague play has come in. Because before interleague play, you could always say, oh, my team's better, and there was no way to actually prove it. I don't like interleague play at all. It was one of those things that I harped on last week. I think I don't like interleague play. But I think it does solve that problem a little bit. But at the same time, Yankees fans have been – look, I was with my buddy Mike Smith when the Mets clinched, and he gave me a big hug and said, congratulations, buddy. And he must have seen the joy that I had. I could not contain myself. And I wasn't yelling. I wasn't screaming. I wasn't crying. I was just silent. And you can tell by the amount of talking that I do on this show and for my friends that know me very well, I tend to open my mouth a lot. Me being silent is pure joy or pure sad.
It's pure, believe
one of the,
it's pure joy for us, too.
Yeah, thanks.
For anyone else who thinks Sean being quiet is pure joy, please call in at 760-283-0846.
Ladies and gentlemen, picture this. I set up the set on the volleyball court, and Seth just spiked it home. No question about it.
Before we get to the NBA preview, I want to talk about a couple quick things. Al Golden.
Hold on one second. So we both have our predictions in. We're both happy with our predictions. We both think the Mets are going to win just in different games. Who do you think is going to be the surprise player of this series? And who do you think is going to be the GOAT? Because there's always one.
I think the surprise player of the series is going to be Noah Syndergaard.
Okay. Well, if they
who
win
think...
in seven, he...
Yeah. You can't even get the
okay.
words out. My goodness. The GOAT is going to be Johnny Cueto.
Okay. All right. I think the surprise player of this series will be Steven Matz, because I think Steven Matz, you're even going to see him. I don't think Syndergaard's going to pitch Game 7.
You think they're going to pitch Mets in Game 7? if it gets there?
No, I think they'll figure something out where maybe Harvey starts and Syndergaard comes in the bullpen. Kind of like a Kirk Schilling and Randy Johnson deal where they each pitch three innings. But I think Matt is going to be out of the bullpen in one of those game six, game seven situations, and he's going to just fire 100-mile-per-hour pitches. Him and Syndergaard are just so much fun to watch because all you do is watch 100 miles an hour come up on that board. And one last thing before I go on this subject. Keith Hernandez said he had never seen a staff like this one before, ever. And he was on some pretty good staffs. So it'll be a fun, fun, fun World Series. But anyway, okay, Al Golden fired. And is it Chud for the next job or is it somebody else?
Well, supposedly Ed Reed wants the job, which I find pretty interesting.
I want the job too, but I'm not getting it either.
What makes you so sure?
I don't know, but if you're giving me the job, I'm in. I got the X's in them.
I would happily take it. I think Rob Jedinski, the ex-coach of the Browns and a Miami guy through is a solid person to be, will certainly be interviewed. I think you're going to look at. I'm assuming Butch Davis is going to be mentioned prominently, although nobody has heard from him in the last couple of years. I wonder if a guy like Pagano, who I think is now gone in Indy, after really just a terrible first half of the year, will be mentioned. It's a good job. It's not USC, but it is a very good job with a huge, huge recruiting base. I don't know. And I mean, Al Golden is a good coach, but for whatever reason, this just did not work. This was not the right fit for either side.
I think Pagano, who was on that staff with Jedinski, is a solid choice. But I think it's going to be one of the coordinators in Alabama. I think it's going to be Mario Cristobal. Who?
Really? First of all, I am very impressed you know who Mario Cristobal is.
Well, remember, he was in the running for the Pittsburgh job when they were still in the Big East. He is one of the top recruiters of South Florida. He turned around FIU. He took them to two bowl games, then had one bad season, and he was out. He's a leading recruiter in South Florida. He played on that team. He was an assistant on that team. Him and Chud, to me, are the two top runners by far, front runners by far. It's not even close. Then you get to everybody else. Because remember, Pagano's a good coach, but Pagano has never recruited. And that's a big deal when it comes time for college football. Cristobal has all those roots. He's got all those connections. I think he's your guy.
Well, I mean, he's not really a coordinator. The coordinators there are Kiffin, who I think that would be interesting. I really do. And Kirby Smart, who has turned, I think he's turned down every interview known to man. It'll be interesting. You have Justin Fuente from Memphis. I'm sure he'll probably get a call. It can be a prime job. It's just the question of, because it is a flat, disorganized, disinterested program. And, you know, you only have to look at the pro team in Miami to see what happens when you go from a flat, disorganized with one coach to a reinvigorated with another. It doesn't take too long.
Seth, that's the thing about that program, though. So I went there when they were one of the top programs in the country. I visited there when they were playing Syracuse. They still didn't fill up the Orange Bowl.
No.
That's a disinterested fan base. They're not Alabama. They're not Michigan. They're not USC. They're not those teams. They're not even Tennessee. They're not those fans that come out and support their team every game. And I think that's a big hindrance to a coach that's coming from one of those programs.
Well, as I said, it'll be a very interesting, and there's plenty of time. I believe there will be a lot of interviews. This will be not a one or two and done. I think there will be a lot of interviews. My gut would say they were going at Jedinski when it's all said and done. But they may want a bigger, well, what's the right word for it? A bigger name. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But it's time to go NBA. It should be a great year in the NBA. You know, we have, there's probably six or seven teams that you could see legitimately making the finals. The problem is only five of those seven teams, six of them are in one conference, and really one is in the other, because I don't think anyone sees anybody except Cleveland making at least. And we'll go into picks, you know, as we go. But there's a lot of things going on. You have the return of Kevin Durant to supposedly full health, and he's going into a free agent year. Is Ty Lawson the answer down in Houston? Which sounds like such a strange thing to say. Paul, you know, can the Clippers finally break this underachieving status? And part of it's because of the difficulty of that division, difficulty of the conference. I believe you had the Clippers in the championship last year, if I remember correctly. Of course, I had the Thunder, who didn't even make the playoffs. But to be fair, I also expected Kevin Durant to be, well, healthy.
I also had the Warriors in the finals the year before. Or just one year too early.
So I wonder if that means I should go with the Clippers then. You know, having brought in Paul Pierce. But let's start in the East. And you look at a really pretty weak division. When you look at the Atlantic, you have the Raptors, the Celtics, the Nets, Knicks, and Sixers. I think most of us write off the Nets and the Sixers as playoff teams right off. I think this is a two-team division. I think you're looking at either the Raptors. You're looking at the Raptors and the Celtics. I don't think any of the other three teams make the playoffs this year. We have time to kind of do a quick run through on some of these. You know, who do you have winning the division?
Well, I have the Raptors winning the division. I have the Celtics coming in second, and then the Knicks, the Nets, and then the Sixers. But the thing is that disturbs me the most about these teams, and maybe it's because it's a metropolitan thing, but when you're as bad as the Nets and the Knicks are, you generally are bottoming out, and you're starting all over, and you're rebuilding for the future. Neither one of these teams has their first-round pick this year. The Knicks gave it up for Andre Bargnani, and the Nets gave it up for either Garnett or Pierce, one of the two. I think it was Garnett. And it's just a matter of how low can you go until you can rebuild, and this is not the Grease song, how low can you go? No, that's not it. But if you look at the 76ers, look, they have talent. Do they have enough talent to jump the Nets and the Knicks? It's possible. I don't think it's likely, but certainly possible. And next year, I think they have like three first in the draft. So, but I think the Raptors are as good a team as you find in this division. I think the Celtics are just better than the other three. I don't think they're a good team. They have a lot of good and no great. And it's kind of like when you have I think it's an NFL saying, or it's a college football saying, when you have two really good quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks, because you don't have a great one to play. And that up front, that's exactly what the Celtics have. So I'm going Raptors, Celtics, Knicks, Nets, 76ers.
I'm going to flip it a little bit. I think I'm going Celtics, Raptors, Nets, Knicks, Sixers. The Ravens, excuse me, the Raptors lose Amir Johnson to the Celtics. They lose the sixth man of the year, Lou Williams. I'm not sure if signing Damari Carroll, considering the amount of wing players that they have, is the right fit. Now, their center, Valanciunas, I can never pronounce his name. is really coming on, and Kyle Lowry is very, very good, supposedly in the best shape of his career. I wonder if they trade DeRozan just to see if he can get some more value, because I think he's going into a free agent here. But I like the Celtics again. I don't think the anyone gets 50 wins in this division. I like Brad Stevens a lot. He's kind of proven this, that the college coach can be respected and can win, because that team admittedly does not have an enormous amount of talent. The backcourt's not bad with Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley, and bringing in Johnson is helpful. But I don't know. I have a feeling. I think the team is that making the playoffs was a big deal for this team, and I see them in a close, like by two or three games. I think the Nets, Knicks, and Sixers all miss out on the playoffs. All of them are disasters in their own ways. The Nets at least made a half-assed run at the championship trying to get Pearson and Garnett. That obviously faded. Deron Williams going to Dallas and getting out of Brooklyn is good for all parties considered. The Knicks probably made the right pick in taking Porzingis, but he's not a savior at age 19. And I guess the question I do have is, at one point, do this Philly owner, now we know the Philly fans are sick of the rebuild in the city of brotherly love. At one point, do the owners kind of look at Sam Hinkle and say, okay, this is enough. We are getting nothing at this point. This is the third year of absolute mediocrity. Not even close to mediocrity. You're looking at 20 to 25 wins at best. At one point, do you say, okay, this is enough? We have to see some kind of progression.
Well, I think you get this year, and then the next year you want that progression. You want that additional. You want that playoffs. They hope Embiid is healthy after this year. They hope they have Saric comes over next year. They have a couple more picks in the draft. I think it's not this year. It's next year that they put all their chips in the middle of the table, and I think that they can do that. They have some talent on that team, and certainly they have cap room. I mean, they haven't even hit the minimum, so if they want to spend, they can. The question is, do they want to spend? They have not spent the last 2 years. In fact, they've had to refund the players some money because it's held in escrow to be a 50-50 split. So we'll see what happens, but I don't think it's this year. I think it's next year. And I think Hinkie and Brown both survive one more year, at least.
There's Derek Fisher.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. Derek Fisher. Sorry. I thought you were talking about the Sixers for some reason.
No, I don't. No, we were. But I'm asking, does Derek Fisher survive?
Oh, Derek Fisher absolutely survives this year. Look, the only reason Derek Fisher leaves is because Derek Fisher wants to leave. He got a 5-year, $25 million contract. They are not firing him. He is Phil Jackson's guy. He's an extension of Phil Jackson. I still think the triangle is a mistake. But look, that's what they're rolling with. So I think he does survive the year. I don't think Lionel Hollins survives the year in New Jersey. Or Brooklyn, excuse me, in Brooklyn. What are your thoughts on that?
I think he does. I think it's a rebuilding year. I don't think there's anything to – I don't know how you can fire him when there's nothing there. And that's why Brent Brown is going to get many years to rebuild this, because there's no talent. Fisher, the question is the maturity level of – I mean, Fisher almost got into a fist fight with Matt Barnes. Again, he is Phil's guy. So that may play a part. But, he just may not be ready to be a head coach at this point.
Yeah, the difference is, though, Seth, at least to me, is that Phil Jackson, again, Derek Fisher is Phil Jackson's guy, right? In Philly, the ownership has bought in on this. And they said, okay, you're going to take X amount of time. And we don't know what that is, but I believe it's 5 years. Mikhail Prokhorov doesn't buy into that crap. And it seems like Billy King continues to get more and more chances because he keeps sacrificing different coaches. And I think he's going to get another one. I don't think he survives. It's just my take on it. You're right, he has no talent. You're right, it's not fair. But somebody's got to go. And I think it's going to be him.
Jumping to the Central, which is, in my opinion, the strongest division in the East. You look at the Cavs. I think the Cavs are the no-brainer to win the division. Chicago is very good, especially if everybody is healthy, but that has been the problem forever. You have Milwaukee, who's up and coming. You have the Pistons, who are up and coming. And you have the Pacers, who no one really knows what to make out of at this point because they're based upon a great forward coming back in Paul George, who 2 years ago led them to the seventh game of the conference finals. But, man, they're – Roy Hibbert's gone. David West is gone. Luis Scalia is gone. I don't see much there. So what are your feelings on the division?
Well, I mean, the Bulls and the Cavs are the class of the division. I think the Bulls take the division. I mean, I think top to bottom, they have the best talent in that division. You're right. They haven't been healthy. You're right. They have some chemistry problems. Mike Dunleavy is out a couple of months. Derrick Rose may or may not play in the first couple of games. Yeah, they have some problems there. But all in all, they have the best talent. They don't have the best player. That player resides a little bit more to the east, and that's in LeBron. We all know about LeBron. We all know about Kyrie and Kevin Love and no chemistry in that team so far. We'll see if that chemistry comes back. The $82 million man in Tristan Thompson, and a whole lot of tax bill for Dan Gilbert. But the fact remains, I think they come in second. I think LeBron takes a little bit more time off this year. I think there is a little bit more cohesion that goes on, but I don't think they win the division. I think actually Chicago probably cruises to the division.
What do you think the impact of Fred Hoiberg coming in will have? Tom Thibodeau, I think, fired, quit, whatever you want to call it, had kind of run his course in Chicago, both from the player standpoint and from the management standpoint. Hoiberg, more of an offensive guy, you know, an ex-player, obviously. You think they're going to mesh that quickly, considering they just didn't mesh well at all last year?
Yeah, I think they will. Hoiberg's more of an offensive guy. Thibodeau is more of a defensive guy. Look, if they're healthy, they are the most talented team in the NBA.
Really?
They are. Yeah, I think if they are healthy, top to bottom, they are the most. They definitely have the most talented front court. Between Mitrovic, Gasol, Noah, and Gibson, show me another front court that's as talented across the entire front court. There isn't one. I mean, you can go to the Clippers. You can go to the Spurs. You can even go to the Spurs and put in Aldridge, Leonard, and Duncan, but you don't have a fourth guy there. And Duncan's good, but Duncan's not Duncan of 10 years ago. Duncan's a 15-8 guy. Well, the Bulls have four of those guys if they have enough time and they're all healthy. So, yeah, I think they're the best front court. And if you bring back Dunleavy and you have Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose, yeah, they have the most talent of any team in the NBA. The only team that comes close to me, and it's close, is the Clippers. Top five of the Clippers being Chris Paul. Where am I going with this? Chris Paul, Jamal Crawford, J.J. Redick, Paul Pierce, DeAndre Jordan, and Blake Griffin.
They're so good, that's six.
Yeah, that's six. I know. I'm saying that's six. I don't think Crawford's at the level of Jimmy Butler, though.
He's not.
I think Derrick Rose may be close enough to Chris Paul, but the others just don't matter. And I don't want DeAndre Jordan in any series. Guy can't hit a free throw.
Well, when we get to the West, we'll talk about that a little bit more. But what are your thoughts on the rest of the division?
Well, the rest of the division will play out the way it does. I mean, Indiana, you're right. Indiana is going to rest a whole lot on Paul George, no question about it. And Paul George, while a great player, is coming off a horrific injury, and who knows what he will be able to put up during a full year. Look, that leg was awful. I mean, absolutely awful. So, who knows? I mean, but if he comes back healthy, he's supposedly playing the four. And him playing the four is a matchup nightmare for anybody. So, I like them, but not really, like, I'm not sure they're a playoff team. You know, last year I liked Detroit. I think Detroit will actually be better this year than last year because Drummond now is the guy. I love the Bucks. Bucks are an entertaining team. All in all, I think you have the class of that division, and then you have everybody else. So if I was going to go top to bottom, it would be Chicago, Indiana, Milwaukee. Wait, where am I going? Chicago, Cleveland, Milwaukee, Indiana, Detroit, and I still like Detroit. So it'd be very good. You might see a lot of teams in the playoffs from this division.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be you're going to have a fight for the eighth seed out of this division. I think I have Cleveland and Chicago, as I think most people do, at the top, and then. I like the Bucks, but I'm wondering if the Bucks is contingent on the health of Jabari Parker. I'm going to say Detroit over Indiana because I look at Indiana, and I don't know what I'm getting there. I don't know what George is bringing at this point. I don't know how long it's going to take him to recover. Monte Ellis is an interesting add-in, but I think they're a team that's going to take a huge step back. They just lost too much talent. And I think you are looking at Detroit and Milwaukee kind of fighting for the eighth in the East. So we go to the Southeast, where you had the Hawks last year coming really out of nowhere to be the class of division. You have the Wizardos, you have Los Hitos, and then you have kind of the fifth. Should be a good three-way run for division title down south. Thoughts?
Calling on my other number, so hold on 1 second.
Hold on, everybody.
Hi,
are you
back?
Okay.
Am I back?
Things of our lives that we never that is now ruined. So other
Aww.
Than that, yes, you are back.
I feel
wah,
for
wah.
You. I do. You know, it's very nice of you to say that. It really is. Okay, well, if you're looking at the West, or the Southeast or whatever you call this division, the Hawks are the class of the, I think the Hawks and the Wizards are the two class of the division. The Wizards came on very quickly and very comfortably last year in the playoffs by playing a lot of small ball, but they had Paul Pierce. Will John Wall and Bradley Beal take that next step up? Yeah, I think they will. I think they finished third in this conference, not third in the division. I think it goes Wizards, Hawks, Magic, Hornets. Who am I missing?
The Heat.
Oh, sorry. Wizards, Hawks, Heat, Magic, Hornets. And I like the Heat. I just think the Heat have absolutely no depth. And
they don't, but their top five is so strong that their starting five, if healthy, And if Whitehead can, we don't know. The problem is, no one knows what to expect from Hassan Whitehead. You know,
exactly.
Guy who was kind of a head case for several years and then came on very strong last year. It's hard to gauge where. It's hard to gauge what to expect. I think Atlanta takes a step back. I don't want to say it was a fluke last year, because that's not. But I don't think it was a fluke. I think San Antonio East, led by really a team that's led by their coach, in Budenholzer, or Budenholzer, excuse me. But I look at Washington. I think Otto Porter is ready to take the next step forward. The backcourt is phenomenal. So I'm debating back and forth, but I'll probably go Wizard, Heat, Hawks, and then Magic and Hornets are going nowhere soon. The Magic just seem to kind of be this permanent stagnation. You know, they've had lottery picks, it feels like, the last 4 years, you know, with Oladipo and
Aaron Gordon. Aaron
Thank
Gordon.
You. And then Elfrid Payton last year. They still have no scoring, except for Tobias Harris. They're not a team. They're just not a team I see really going very far. And the Hornets just can't get out of their own way.
They're definitely the most exciting player and possibly their best player, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist.
Well, exciting because watching him shoot is just so painful.
No, watching him play defense is amazing. I love watching that guy play defense. He's kind of like Michael Cooper, who also could not shoot until much later in his career. So give him a little bit of time here. So if you had to pick your top eight, where are you going with this?
I got Cleveland 1.
Yep.
Washington 2.
Okay.
The new rules, you don't have to go by division, correct? It's only by record?
Correct.
Okay. So Chicago
division
3.
Division don't mean squad.
Yeah, Chicago 3. I'd probably go Miami 4, Atlanta 5, Boston 6, Toronto 7, and the 8th spot will go to Milwaukee.
Okay. I have the Bulls 1, the Cavs 2, the Hawks 3, the Wizards 4, the Heat 5, the Raptors 6, the Bucks 7, and the Celtics 8. And that would be a fairly large turn because under the old rules, the Raptors would have gotten the number 3 seed. And because of the new rules, they get the number 6 seed.
Yeah, which makes me wonder, is there any real point in having divisions?
No, I just said the divisions have nothing. They don't mean squat.
The divisions are now relatively pointless. And it'll be interesting to see if at some point they just determine that they're better off just getting rid of them.
Well, the only thing that I don't know if you still play your division team, if it's a balanced schedule. So if it's a balanced schedule, then you're right. It means absolutely nothing. But if it's a non-balanced schedule, then it does mean something. And to me, then it's just unfair. Sorry, go ahead.
No. I have a yelling dog.
If you have the Nets playing the Knicks 10 times, and you have the Bulls playing the Cavs 10 times, but the Knicks only play the Bulls 5 times, then the Nets or Knicks, whoever is the worst of the teams, has a much easier time of it. So you have that problem. And it's the same as like postseason it's the same as interleague play in baseball. Where if your rival is the Cardinals or this year or the Yankees or I can't say the Red Sox or sure, but a great team and you're some other guy's rival in the same division is the Marlins, well, you have an unfair advantage. But anyway, let's move on to the West. Start with the Pacific. Let's go all the way out there. So the Warriors division. So
yeah, I'm a little curious why, when you were talking about most talented teams, the defending champions don't come into play.
They don't. To me, they don't. They don't. Look, you can put them all you want. You have Kurt, as far as a top eight are concerned. So the top eight at Golden State, right? You have Curry, you have Thompson, who, look, those guys are amazing. No question about it. Okay? You have Curry, you have Thompson, you have Harrison Barnes, you got Bogut, Iguodala, who am I up to, seven, six?
Give or take, yeah.
All right, let's see here. So I have Barnes, Bogut, Curry, Iguodala, Draymond Green is five. Klay Thompson, six. And your seven and eight are Marcus Spites and Jason Thompson. You're telling me you're not going to take the Bulls over that?
From a front court standpoint, yeah. But I would also, I would have Sean Livingston, who I think is phenomenal.
Okay, but your backcourt is, yes, it's Thompson. Is the backcourt that big of a stretch? So your backcourt is Klay Thompson and Stephen Curry, right? And I said if healthy. So the backcourt of Chicago is Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, it would be top. They would be top three. I understand where you're coming from. I'm just surprised that they weren't even mentioned. So
because I don't think your six through eight are very good. Maybe seven and eight.
They're
seven and eight are average.
Eight.
Right. So you get into problems. Foul problems, or I get what you're saying. I did say healthy. So, yeah, I see where you're at, but I just don't see them. Look, they are the best team, but I don't view them as the most talented team. Because Draymond Green is not an overall talent. He's a good player for that system, but you put him. Let's put him in the Bulls system, right? Does he even start?
Probably not. No, he
right.
would start as a three. He would absolutely start as a three. Over Dunleavy, over McDermott? Yeah.
No, when they go big. So you got Mitrovic or Gasol. Mitrovic is at the three along
Gasol
with Taj
Gibson.
Gasol
is at the four and Noah is at the five.
Right. Okay, but if he does start, fine. He starts. He's the worst of those guys. I guess my point is the Draymond Green is perfect for that system. That system is not the same as everybody plays and not necessarily good for every system either. So,
okay.
Yeah, they're talented, but I don't think they're as talented as the Bulls. Just my take on it. I do have them first in this division.
Are we saying that the Clippers window is closed?
No. I just have them. I think over a short series, maybe the Clippers win, but over a long season, I don't think they do.
So what? Give
this
me your
is
five.
This is just the preseason here.
Yeah.
Right? We're just talking. By the way, did they go away from divisions? I think they might have.
What do you mean?
Because I have yet to see a prediction based on divisions anywhere on line, anywhere.
That I don't know. No, I think it's because there's no point. Nobody cares about the division titles at this point. So,
right.
I mean,
so
honestly,
we should talk.
Yeah, we're just using divisions for our purposes, not really for anything more than anything else. It's just easier to separate as opposed to analyzing 15 teams. We're analyzing five at a time.
All right,
now,
fair enough. So the five
now we've had controversy. We've had controversy right. with the Clippers, obviously this year. DeAndre Jordan signs with Dallas, or orally agrees to sign with Dallas, and suddenly Chris Paul runs back from the Cayman Islands, and he gets this $80 million deal. A lot for a guy with a limited offensive game and no free throw shooting ability.
Yeah, I think I actually shoot free throws better than DeAndre Jordan.
I don't know. You're a pretty shitty shooter.
Yeah,
but,
no, I am. That's exactly what I was getting at.
So
precisely,
you have the Warriors. I'm assuming the order is going to be the Warriors, Clippers, probably the Suns, and then either some variation of Kings over the then probably the Kings and then the Lakers. I'm guessing.
Yep.
Yeah.
I got the Lakers over the Kings, but that's neither here nor there.
Kings should be one of the more interesting teams in the NBA to watch, just because they are a complete and utter disaster, and which always makes things interesting. With bringing in Rajon Rondo, George Karl and DeMarcus Cousins not even barely speaking. We're still waiting for Rudy Gay to deserve his $18 million or whatever it is a year contract. You know, this is a team that an owner who just seems, because he's an expert in one thing, does not always make you an expert in another. The Lakers are just in complete rebuild. I don't see them winning more than 25 games. And if this is Kobe's last year, it's a rough way to go out.
Who do you have in last place?
The Lakers.
Like, let's go the other way. Who do you have in last place in this conference?
Probably would be the Lakers. I look in the Central, or the Northwest, I guess it's called. I'm sorry. And, I mean, I can see an argument for the Nuggets. I can see an argument for the Trailblazers. But I think the Lakers are really bad. It's been a mixed run on D'Angelo Russell. Your two guard, shoots 40 times a game and is 40 years old. Julius Randle's played, I think, exactly one NBA game. Jordan Clarkson's a decent player, but the West is still very, very strong. And I just don't see, I don't see their upside right now.
Could be in last. So the Mavericks, who have nobody. The Wolves, who have a ton of talent and no heads. The Lakers or the Blazers. The Blazers have a guy that's just going to chuck it up 75 times. Maybe. I think he might set the record for all-time attempts in Damian Lillard. Great talent, but all alone on that team. The Mavericks are starting JaVale McGee at center. And Deron Williams at point guard. And I love Mark Cuban. I love what he does for the sport, but I feel bad for Dirk. He's going down the wrong way right now. And the Wolves are a good team, but they're a good team 3 or 4 years from now. They have a ton of talent. They might be able to play together. I don't see them doing it. And the Lakers, you're right. But I think the Lakers win just enough games to stay out of the basement. I think they finished 4th.
I thought you said you had the Lakers over the Kings. So do you have the Kings at that low?
I do have the Kings at that low. If everything goes to hell in a handbasket. If everything goes to hell in a handbasket, they may trade DeMarcus Cousins. If they do that, all bets are off.
If they trade DeMarcus Cousins, then they will be the worst team in the NBA.
All bets.
It's hard. Yeah. You look at that Northwest division, it seems strange. And maybe this is the first time in years where you're starting to see a transition. That division is not very strong. Assuming Kevin Durant comes back healthy, they cruised to that division.
Yeah.
The Nuggets are rebuilding. They traded Ty Lawson. They picked up Emmanuel Mudiay, which looks like a solid pick for them. The Timberwolves, as you said, have a lot of young talent. They bring in Karl-Anthony Towns, the number one pick overall. It's a team with last year's number one pick and rookie of the year, Andrew Wiggins. They still have rookie Rubio. There is some decent talent on this team. The sleeper team, and it's not that much of a sleeper at this point, is the Utah Jazz, who really overachieved, I think, in a lot of ways. Quinn Snyder was a guy who I thought his career was over after all the issues with him in Missouri. Somehow he ends up the head coach in Utah and does a wonderful job. And, you know, I mean, well, let's say Dante Exum out for the year. But, you know, a solid, really solid front court of Gordon Hayward, Rudy Gobert, and Derek Favors. They need a point guard. I think they're a year away from being a playoff threat. And I think Oklahoma City is the only team to go to the playoffs out of that division. And I think they cruise.
I think you're right. And I think Oklahoma City actually takes the number one spot in that conference because of
that. Yeah, as do I. But unlike in the East, I think that I don't think it matters quite as much here because it's just such a war. But yeah. I think Oklahoma wins this division by about 10 to 15 games.
I would agree with you there. And you're right. These teams, there are a lot of young teams in this division that just haven't gotten to the maturity level yet. And I think it's a good time at this point to point out, and look, the NBA lost a really good coach from all respects, a really good person this year and this week in Flip Saunders.
Yeah, and this is something I was going to talk about at the end. It was interesting. It was only last week that he decided he wasn't going to be available for the year. And I don't think anyone anticipated the expediency of the cancer. It just no one understood it, how bad shape he was in. And you know, our condolences obviously to the Timberwolves and to Saunders' family. But a class act, a guy well liked. He was a head coach in Washington as well. You know, and he never really, you know, he never made a championship. He did make a conference finals with Garnett and Sprewell. I think he was the coach at that point in Minnesota. Stephon Marbury, actually, of all people, wrote a very nice eulogy, kind of a eulogy, for lack of a better term, on Instagram, of all places, which I find strange. But, you know, a class act, well-liked and kind of beloved in Minnesota. You know, a city where, you know, he could have gone anywhere, but it kind of, even though he's from Milwaukee originally, he really did. It does seem like he kind of grew up and kind of became as a Minnesota guy. It was kind of the face of Minnesota basketball, other than Kevin Garnett over the last 2 days, over since its inception.
Yeah, I would certainly go and share your feelings on that. Look, he's universally loved. Without Flip Saunders, Kevin Garnett has said this, Kevin McHale has said this, you don't have the Kevin Garnett that we grew up with. And Kevin Garnett is our age. So we grew up, this one guy that I look at and I say, I grew up with this basketball player, it's Kevin Garnett. Number two would be Kobe Bryant. They're right along the same age as we are. Garnett has universal respect. As a player, he's also a very dirty player. He's got the head respect.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's not exactly very well liked.
No,
but, yeah,
but he's
very
got the
well
respect. He's got the respect. So I think it's a combination of that, which brings the respect for Flip Saunders. And look, the league lost a great guy. And that's really all that can be said about that. And look, no matter what you think when you hear that, and this is the first thing that I thought about when I heard that he passed away, and he passed away from Hodgkin's lymphoma, which I believe is a cancer of the immune system. Pro athletes or pro coaches get cancer and they take time off. I wouldn't say it's universally expected, but a lot of people expect this to be, okay, he'll deal with cancer and he'll come back. Because it's happened a lot, especially with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Mario Lemieux being the number one guy that I can recall. We'll get to the other guy that in the last 5 minutes. But cancer is cancer. It doesn't really matter who it attacks. It is one awful disease. We've all seen it up close. We've all had people that we know that have passed away from this dreaded disease. And look, there are walks every day. There are challenges every day that people take. And if you have the means to donate, I would hope that you do. I try and donate to all my friends that are doing stuff for that, for those causes. It's one bitch of a disease, and it will take whether you're an athlete or whether you're just a regular person. So our condolences go out to, again, to the Timberwolves and to the Saunders family. We shall move on, though. Seth, you take the next division. Go for it.
Well, next division is probably the toughest division in basketball. You look at the Southwest. You have the Spurs, who signed the best free agent out there in LaMarcus Aldridge. Houston is still certainly a championship candidate. The Grizzlies are just always that brutally tough team who seem to lose in game 7 of a second round series. And the Pelicans have the best young player in basketball, bar none, in Anthony Davis. I think all of them make the playoffs. The Mavs, you have to feel bad for the Mavs. I mean, again, you're looking at a team where, you know, if DeAndre Jordan goes there and Wes Matthews is there and can play healthy, then you look at a starting five that's not terrible. It's not great, but it's not terrible. But they're now, as you said, they're kind of a disaster. And although it looks like they're going to re-sign Rick Carlisle to a 5-year extension, who's one of the best coaches in the NBA. I think the Rockets win the division. I think bringing in Lawson is it's going to be a very interesting mix, because James Harden is a guy who loves to handle the ball, knowing he's a two guard. You know, he leads the league in free throw attempts because he drives so much. And he was able to do that because there was no real point guard. You know, whether it's Beverly or I forget the other one off the top of my head, Harden dominated the ball. I don't know how that's going to play out with Lawson. But I think for the regular season, I think they're going to be very – I do think that they'll figure their way through this and they'll win the division. I think the Spurs are just kind of teeing up for playoff time. As always, they're going to take a lot of the year. It's more of a resting of the year, waiting to see, you know, how LaMarcus Aldridge kind of fits with the rest of the team, you know, how they blend it all together. But that team will be fine come playoff time. The Grizzlies are the sixth seed that nobody wants to play. Mike Conley is probably the most underrated point guard in the league. And the Pelicans have Anthony Davis in Upstead. So I go Rockets, Spurs, Grizzlies, Pelicans, Mavs.
Okay, I think this is the year that the Grizzlies take a step back. But by take a step back, it's not much, right? I mean, the Pelicans have the best player. Look, there's no LeBron James anywhere but in Cleveland. But overall, Anthony Davis is the best player in the league. He absolutely is. He does more things than LeBron. He is a better player than LeBron right now. LeBron gets much more respect. He will get many more calls. He can do things that Anthony Davis can't do, which is defend every single position. But it's my opinion that Anthony Davis is the best player in the league. It kind of reminds me when Jordan was still playing and he got the respect, but he really wasn't the best player in the league. I think that's where I'm at right now with him. I agree with you. The Rockets are going to take this division. I think they easily take this division, actually. I think the Spurs are number two for all the reasons you just said. I think it then comes to the Pelicans and then the Grizzlies. So, and then the Mavs.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, the Mavs are kind of an afterthought. Wes Matthews coming back so quickly from ACL, from torn ACL, I wish him the best of that.
Achilles with him. It's even worse.
Achilles, excuse me. Although he came back in an extraordinarily quick time. So hopefully he's back and playing pretty well pretty soon. You know, it's funny, for the last 5, 6, 7 years, the West has been the strongest conference. And while the stronger teams are still in the West at the top level, at the medium and lower level, it does seem like once you hit that number eight team, whether it's Phoenix or Utah, the East kind of in the lower tier, it does seem to have a little bit more depth. I wonder if that's the trend that's going to continue. When I look at that, because there was trouble for me between Milwaukee and Detroit, Indiana, you know, I don't see a huge difference between that talent level and a talent level in Utah or a talent level in Phoenix at this point, who are really the two teams I think you see fighting for the eighth spot. So who are your eight?
So my eight start with the Thunder at number one, the Warriors at number two, Spurs at number three, the Rockets at number four, Spurs at number five, the Pelicans at number six, the Grizzlies at number seven, and the Suns at number eight.
Okay.
I don't have the Jazz
team
in the playoffs.
You don't have what?
I don't have the Jazz in the playoffs. The Jazz are
number
nine.
Well, you had said that you were similar to me, you only had one team in that, and that's why I agree. I think Oklahoma City, as long as people stay healthy, Oklahoma City wins that division and has the one seed. I think I have Houston two. I have Golden State three, the Clippers four, the Spurs five, which means we have a rematch of last year's epic seven-game series,
yep,
which is something I think they don't want under any circumstance.
Nope.
The Grizzlies six, the Pelicans seven, and the Suns eight. I guess now we can kind of go a little bit further in. Who are your conference finals?
So my final four, right, because that's where you go with this, is the Cavs and Bulls and the Warriors and Clippers.
Finals?
I have the Cavs and Warriors with the Cavs winning.
I have the Cavs and Bulls. I have the Clippers and I have the Clippers. I guess you couldn't really do that. I have the Clippers and I was about to say the Clippers and Oklahoma City. Although
okay.
If I have the Clippers in a 4-5 game, that doesn't work, does it?
No, but you could be wrong on that part.
Yeah, I have Oklahoma City and the Clippers. I have Cleveland over the Bulls. I have the Clippers over Oklahoma City, and then I have Cleveland over the Clippers. Neither of us after our last couple picks, neither of us going out on huge realms and huge legends with these moves.
No, unlike me 2 years ago, who makes the Warriors pick, which I thought was a pretty good pick at the time.
It wasn't too bad.
Okay, so who do you have as your MVP?
Kevin Durant.
Me too, considering I think they're going to run away with this. Who's your rookie of the year?
My rookie of the year is Emmanuel Mudiay.
I hate you. Okay. Defensive player of the year.
Do you hate me? I guess that means you were taking Mudiay as well.
Yeah,
defensive player. Sorry to disappoint you. Defensive player of the year, Rudy Gobert.
I have Serge Ibaka, especially if they win that division as candidly as I think they will. Sixth man of the year.
Sixth man of the year. I'll go with the old reliable, Jamal Crawford.
Okay, now here's your twist. I think Tristan Thompson comes to play.
Really?
I think he got his money. And he puts up 14-8 every game. If he puts up 14-8 every game, he's your sixth man of the year.
What were your thoughts on his contract?
Oh, I think it was, we'll give you a little bit more to get your butt in here. I mean, there was no way they could let him go, and yet there was no way they could give him a max contract. So it was kind of, here's rock, here's hard place, what do we do with this? Who is your coach of the year?
Billy Donovan.
Mine too. Who's your most improved player of the year?
My most improved player of the year. Damn, I got to think about this for a second.
Meta World Peace.
that's not really setting the bar too high. Give me a minute. Give me a second here.
Well, considering you didn't play last year, that might be an improvement, right?
Yeah, well, then you kind of go with Julius Randle as well. Most improved player. I'm going to go with Myers Leonard up in Portland.
Okay, I'm going to go with Andrew Wiggins, which I don't really think matters. I can't pick the number one pick being the most improved, so I'll go with Otto Porter. I'll go with Otto Porter. I think Otto Porter makes a good run at this. Who do you think is the first player traded? The first big player traded, if there is a big player traded.
I would really, really, for all Knicks fans, I'd really like to say Carmelo Anthony.
Ain't going to happen.
But I don't. I was about to say, but I don't see it. Eric Bledsoe.
Where do you think he goes? Because that's a $14 million contract.
Yeah, I know that. But I think he's now that you have Brandon Knight signed at the same thing, I don't think you need two at the same. I wouldn't, let me think here. The problem is nobody really needs point guards.
That's right.
You know, maybe you trade him to Sacramento. You know, Rondo's only on a 1-year deal.
Yep.
And Bledsoe strikes
the only
me
other
as
place
Carl,
I can see
Carl,
him going.
George Karl kind of guy.
I can see him going to Milwaukee. They get fed up with Michael Carter Williams. Does he play very well in Jason Kidd's role?
Yeah, I can see that as well.
If I was going to pick one guy that gets traded, I'm looking. Who do I want to get traded? Who do I want to trade? It's like, who do I want? I'm only looking in the West. Hold on a second. I really don't see anybody that I really think that. I think Joe Johnson will get traded.
You think someone's going to? Well, I guess he's in his last. Is he in his last year of his
$22 million
contract?
Last year of that contract. I think he gets traded for a draft pick at some point. Not a first rounder, but maybe a couple of seconds.
No, I can see a couple of seconds to a team that needs a two guard, and that is you only trade him to a team that you think can win a championship.
Yep.
So, I guess an interesting thought.
You mean like going to the Thunder?
Like going to the Thunder? Could you see him being traded back to Atlanta?
You could, sure. Why not? He loves Atlanta. Atlanta loved him. For 1 year, why not?
Why not? You take your shot at it.
He doesn't play the defense that way, though. I think he's more an Oklahoma City guy. Anyway, we got 5 minutes left. Let me touch upon mine. I'll give it to you. You know what? We talked about one person that succumbed to cancer this week. I'd like to... I can't even shout loud enough or give enough applause to Eric Berry, who made it all the way back from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma this week to play, well, this year. He's been playing the entire year for the Kansas City Chiefs as a safety. This week had his first interception since he's come back. There are very few words that I can actually put when I heard that he had come back and was playing as well, and I watched some of the game and playing as well as he did. Congratulations to Eric Berry and to all his friends and family, because that is one hell of an achievement.
And from one side of the pendulum to the other, Greg Hardy comes back after a year suspension. And... I'm actually reading this from ESPN because this was something I wanted to talk about. You know, thank God he's a great pass rusher, because he doesn't really bring much else as a human being, it seems. You know, he was suspended for domestic abuse and threatened to kill a woman. He's out for a year. You know, I'm reading this actually straight from ESPN. Upon reinstatement, he couldn't wait to face the New England Patriots. He told reporters he couldn't wait to see Tom Brady's supermodel wife, Gisele Bündchen, and that he hopes he brought her sister to the game, and that he votes for Pro Bowl candidates based on the appearance of their significant others. So, you know, forgetting how stupid this sounds, you know, suddenly yesterday when the Giants the ex-Cowboy, Dwayne Harris, returns a kick 100 yards for a touchdown. Hardy goes after the special teams coach and then gets in a shouting match with Dez Bryant. Dez Bryant is your peacemaker? Is your voice of reason? Then there's really something. This is an issue. And what happens? The same thing that always seems to happen. You know, Jerry Jones and Jason Garrett criticize? No, of course not. Do they do anything? No. What do? They encourage him to do this again. He's a real leader. To quote Jerry Jones, he's one of the real leaders on this team, and he earns it. He earns it with respect from all his teammates. That's the kind of thing that inspires a football team. I don't have any issue with him being involved in motivating or pushing any part of the football team. Yeah, you know what? This is why, since you lost all your players 20 years ago, Jerry, you've won one playoff game. And, you know, nobody buys it. Nobody believes you. And we know they're not going to do anything because you're 3-4 and they play Seattle next week. And threats are empty because they just are. It's a joke. He's someone, you know, thank God he's a football player because he brings nothing else to the party whatsoever. And Jerry Jones and Jason Garrett just enable the heck out of it. And it's a damn shame. I think that's it for this week. Next week, we'll talk
a lot more about the World Series.
We'll talk World
Hopefully
Series. We'll talk
celebration of we'll, our show.
We'll talk NFL. We'll talk college. And, you know, and we're a couple weeks away from Sean's big vacay. So for Sean Palmer, this is Seth Gaimans on the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show, backsportspage.com.
Thanks, everybody.
Talk Radio.
Have a good night.
Have a good one. Bye.